Now Blog Talk Radio Show, brought to you by the National Association for Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Tammy Schaffstall. I'm calling in from Lighthouse Point, Florida, and I'll be your host tonight. Excuse me. Tonight's show is a call-in discussion question and answer show, and our special guest is Mr. Bill Murray with the 12-Step Recovery. So I'm excited to be here. If you'd like to join into the conversation, the number is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. Before we get started with the show, let me tell you a little bit about NASCA. Sorry. The National Association for Adult Survivors of Child Abuse is a nonprofit reorganization, and we're self-supporting through our own contributions. If you'd like to donate to NASCA, please do so, and it is tax deductible. Here at NASCA, we have a single purpose to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent and physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so from two perspectives. First, we educate the public, especially getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, and we present the facts to show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. We also offer hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone who is interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. So thank you for being here. Here at NASCA, we are fighting for children, and we are supporting survivors. If you'd like to call in, the telephone number is 646-595-2118. And right now, I've got Mr. Bill Murray in the studio. It's me and Bill. So good evening, Bill. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you, Tammy. And I appreciate your being here tonight.
It's been a minute since I've been on the show. Hopefully I can get right back into the groove of things. So I see that you're going to be you're going to be my guest speaker tonight, talking about Bill's recovery is 12-step based and spans over 3.5 decades. So, Mr. Bill, I'll turn the mic over to you, sir.
Thanks, Tammy. I want to explain to anybody that looked up the schedule, even a couple of days ago, that we had Jaime Romo here, who's a very likable fellow who comes on once a month. But he had a conflict with tonight's date, which is his normal, the day he comes on is the third Thursday. And so he asked me if I could fill in. That's why I'm here. It turns out that okay. I don't have a date. Well, I don't have a date this month or next month, which is kind of odd. But I do substitute when there's a fifth that's a fifth Tuesday or fifth Thursday, I come on. But this time I just substitute for timing and give him the break. So that's why I'm here. I'll see if I can remember how to do the show again.
Okay.
It's been a minute, as you say. No.
It's been a minute.
Encourage people. Yeah. we want to encourage folks to call in. Okay, that's what this is all about, really. It's a it says in the description, it's a call, it's a Q&A call-in discussion. Okay, so it could be you have a question about recovery or about NASCA itself, and you want to bring it up and find out what we'd say. But it could also be a topic that's confusing to you, or you'd like a little more illumination on, and that would become a discussion on that topic, and everybody would have an opportunity to participate in that discussion. But it can be anything. This is a really open show. As the co-hosts, we call them co-hosts rather than special guests on Tuesday and Thursday, my role as the co-host is to try to field some of these questions or discussions from either part of my background, which has to do with the fact that I'm obviously in recovery, but I'm also, we call it a professional. In my case, the professionalism is to have become the CEO of this organization, but also having been a part of Alcoholics Anonymous, as it says here in the description, for 40 years now, almost 40. So from either perspective or any, or just what mm-hmm. I've learned about from people sharing with me over all these years. So that's the idea. And we want people to call in and not feel afraid to do so, because there's no, there's no dumb questions or anything like that. So the number to dial, of course, is 646-595-2118. 646-595-2118. We'll have that phone number running all evening. And if you would like to join us, you can jump in by calling that number. Which is, if I don't say it too often, it's on the front page of the website, regardless of the NASCA website. My experience, the experience of all the co-hosts, I call them hyphenates sometimes, they're survivors and professionals simultaneously, so that they have experience mm-hmm. in both areas, and they would be able to answer from either perspective or both. And so that's what we're, that's what we do on Tuesdays and Thursdays. These co-hosts are all planned ahead of time, so they're not, but then everybody else is a call-in person. So we hope some people will call in.
Okay, well, if not, you and I can have a discussion. I've got a tick in my throat, so please excuse me. I guess a smoker's cough, if you want to know the truth. I got to quit smoking cigarettes. I keep trying and keep trying. I keep failing. I try and fail and try and fail. But maybe one day I'll put those things down. I quit them for years and years and years and years and pick it back up. Well, Bill, I will turn it over to you. I mean, I've got plenty to talk about, because I've been going through a lot in my personal life, so I've got plenty I can talk about. But if I wanted to give you an opportunity, if there's something that you want to bring up, something that's on your mind, before we get started, I wanted to give you that opportunity.
Well, the only thing I'll bring up is, since you already brought it up, is the perceived failure that a person might have when they attempt to be in recovery of some sort. And in terms of drinking and using, they have a slip, okay? In terms of recovery from child abuse trauma, they have a reaction to trauma again. They might have flashbacks. They might have post-traumatic stress disorder, even after being sober and clean and in recovery for 10 years. It comes back. It does come back.
Mm-hmm.
But the point I want to make is, you stop thinking of that as a failure if you can, because I don't see it mm-hmm. as a failure. I just see it as, a stepping stone in the right direction, especially if you catch it. Even if you're drinking and you're an uh-huh. alcoholic, when an alcoholic falls down by drinking, we hope that they'll get right back up and go back to stopping drinking. And that, that uh-huh. is possible in AA, because there are, there's 3,500 AA meetings in Los Angeles alone, morning, noon, and night.
right.
So, there's a lot of meetings, and this is repeated all over the country and all over the world. So there are plenty of opportunities. You have to go seek them because they're not, like, put on billboards, but they are put on the white pages of the phone book, and they are put, you know, in the 411 operators, and they are online now, and they can list them. Anyway, the point is that it's very easy to allow the seeming failure, which it's not, but that's what we perceive it as, to stop us from going forward again. And that's what we can't do. We should not do. We should see this as an opportunity to grow, you know, another experience, and perhaps also to be a little more gentle with other people who slip, you know, who make a mistake, who, you know, because we're kind of tough guys too sometimes, you know, and we hold it against people when they haven't, like, been able to keep up or however we put it, you know. And you know, that's not helpful to either one of us, because it builds a barrier between us and the newcomer, and, you know, and then the newcomer shies away from, why would I call him again? He's gonna you know, yell at me for whatever I did. But that's not what happens.
I was successful, you know, and cram their success down your throat, you know, make it feel even worse, right?
Exactly.
I mean, one of the things I've noticed, you know, Bill, I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm so sorry. Go ahead.
No, it's all right. It's all right. Well, okay, let me quickly say, I am grateful that I did slip once. I've done pretty well in the 4 years, but at the very beginning, I was sober for about 6 weeks, and I thought, oh, anybody can do this, you know? And then I drank, and I figured, you know, they told me it's the first drink that gets you drunk, so I drank the first drink, and I didn't get drunk. And the next night, I drank two drinks, and I didn't get drunk. So the third night, of course, my alcoholic brain convinced me that I wasn't going to get drunk, so I might as well get drunk. I mean, I wasn't going to get, you know, taken by the alcohol, so I was going to get drunk, and then I couldn't stop. So fortunately, I stayed out for a while, but I came crawling back in, you know, really beat up again, even worse than I was when I originally showed up. And that's what I needed. I needed to be kind of pounded down a little more. So 40 years ago, I had the one slip that had to do with alcoholic use again, and it only lasted a few weeks. But the reason I'm grateful for it is I would be a real jerk if, like you said, if I had never had a slip and somebody else did have a slip and they were trying to come back, I would be so judgmental about them. How could you not do it? It's so easy, blah, blah, blah. So I learned that, you know, there are reasons for the behaviors that we come up with, the good and the bad, that if you seek them, it helps you grow. And that's the point. So I'm sorry I cut you off.
Well, No. I should have let you finish. You know, I think you're right. I've seen it, you know, on Facebook, and I've had it with friends, and, you know, I have family members who are in AA who, you know, are really, really into the program. And one thing I noticed when they first quit and they're successful, you know, they do become judgmental. You know, well, I quit, and what about this? And, you know, I've seen this guy on Facebook, and he had a drug addiction problem. And I noticed his post kept saying, yeah, my lifestyle was this, and I was able to get rid of it. I don't understand why my friends, blah, 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 blah. And I had to tell him, I said, dude, you know, I think I sent it in an IM. I didn't bust him out on Facebook. But I'm like, you know, your friend's behavior hasn't changed. Yours has. Now you expect everybody else's behavior to change because yours did. You know, your journey is your journey. And, you know, I understand you may not want to associate with those people for obvious reasons, but you can't judge them because, you know, they were successful, you were successful, and you chose to make it, you know, make a change, and they didn't come along with you. So, and I noticed he changed his tune a little bit. His posts weren't as arrogant and condescending and, you know, I did it and I don't understand and why can't you and blah, 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 blah. So, you know, I think you're right. We've got to be sympathetic because we're all on a different journey. And, you know, even though we have common threads on things, whether it's abuse or child abuse or, you know, stopping a bad habit, you know, which I struggle with, a couple of them, we've got to be gentle. You know, I know my sister who was, you know, really, really deep in AA, she's come a long way. When she first got on hers, she went through that, you know, high horse. And, you know, I can call her now, and she is so understanding and so sympathetic, and don't worry about it, and you're in a safe zone. And, you know, I called her drunk last night, if you want to know the truth. You know, a lot of what I'm going through, I noticed, you know, I'm not an alcoholic by no means. But I tend, especially with what I've been going through, I've been self-medicating. And then,
right.
You know, I'll call her up and, you know, and I'll just, you know, going through. It brings the triggers. And like Carlene told me, my sister told me, you know, it makes when you drink, you know, unless you're drinking for social or having a good time, but if you're doing it to self-medicate, it just exemplifies what you're going through. I start thinking about things and rationalizing things, and my brain's not able to rationalize it. Maybe I do shut it off and throw it in the back of my mind when I'm not drinking, and then when I drink, there it is. You know, it just brings up, you know, triggers magnified 10 times. So, and it's a struggle for, I know it's a struggle for me and possibly for other people as well.
Oh, no question.
What do you think?
You know, we get to really look at our character defects and shortcomings, is what we call them officially in AA, but our things that make us less than. we really get to see them, and we get to see them like as if they were in a magnifying glass. And then when we bring them up, we admit to them, say in a group, and somebody comes over to us and says, "I can't believe you did that to yourself. You had 3 years already," you know, whatever it is. That can just crush us. It can just crush us because it
doesn't
proof,
help anybody.
Proof positive that, that's right. That's right. So, you know, I'm happy to share any of the stories of my life, including the ones that aren't pretty. You know, because I'll tell you the ugly ones are just as probably more educational. You know, you learn more from that stuff than you do from if everything went on the straight and narrow, I feel. So.
Right. Well, Bill, you know my story. You know, I've told my story a couple of times on the show, you know,
right.
Dealing with the child abuse that I went through. It's been a bizarre few months for me. You know, I was, as you know, I was abused physically by my grandmother. She was very mean and very cruel and just did horrible things to me. And then my mother married, got a stepfather. My dad died when I was young, and, you know, I had a stepfather, and then, you know, he abused me in other ways. You know, he attempted sexual abuse, did sexual abuse other family members, very dysfunctional, you know, put down, you know, my nickname was Dummy, you know, and as you know, we found out that he had stage 4 cancer about this time last year, and then it was apparent, you know, probably about September that he was dying, and I ended up getting in the car and going home and sawing for the last time, and, you know, it brought up a lot of memories there, you know, the time that he was dying. But then when he died, it just blew my world apart, you know, because things come up that you forgot about and feelings came up, and it's been a really, really tough thing. And like my sister said, you know, in some aspects it gave us closure. But one of the most bizarre things that Carlene doesn't have that I have, my sister doesn't have that I have, is my grandmother who physically and mentally and emotionally abused me so badly. You know, a lot of those memories came back up because at least my stepdad acknowledged what he did and apologized. My grandmother never did.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, once we got through a lot of the heartache, and her and I talk about it, getting through it. You know, her more so than me got closure, you know, and I felt like I got a lot of closure from that, you know, and I was the last person to see him before they closed the casket. Here he is, you know, dying on a machine, and, you know, I'm sitting there, you know, he's obviously dead, but the machine was breathing for him, you know, having to, you know, make the choice, am I going to forgive him? Because, you know, I withheld forgiveness, and I've made it very vocal of how I feel about, you know, forgiveness. But I had to make that choice, and it was against everything I've been talking about for the last 3 years, you know. And then, you know, I was the last one to see the casket, you know, close, and, you know, and I finally, you know, right before they closed it, I said, I forgive you. You know, I don't want him to, you know, I just, you know, and he apologized for what he did. He acknowledged it, and that was tough in itself. I mean, and then, you know, then, of course, now he's a martyr. You know, my whole family, my mother, you know, he's, you know, a martyr, you know, a saint, You know, this man was far from a saint, but, you know, he's a human being. But the bizarre thing is it brought up so many feelings about my grandmother that I never got an apology from. She never acknowledged what she did, never thought she did anything wrong, and she's dead, and I'll never get that apology. It brought up so many feelings on that. And one of the things I did, you know, I've been friggin' self-medicating. You know, I like to drink socially. I'm not an alcoholic. And, you know, when I'm having fun with my friends, I can have a couple. But when I start self-medicating, I go off the deep end. I mean, off the friggin' deep end. And
right.
And it's not good, and it's not healthy. And, you know, and then,
no.
Then especially when I'm dealing with all this, it magnifies everything. You know, my poor sister, I blew up her phone, not so bad last night, but I think it was Friday night. Poor thing. I mean, the shit that I was bringing up, excuse my language, and the things I was talking about, but it was real for me. I mean, I was, and she says, Tammy, you can't keep reliving it. You can't keep reliving it. And, you know, when you self-medicate with alcohol, you just relive it and relive it magnified 10 times. You know, you got to understand, you know, what you're doing. If you want to drink, I'm not going to tell you not to drink, but don't drink as a self-medicating, as self-medication. It's not helping you. And so that's kind of
right.
Some of the stuff I've been dealing with. So I'll shut up and, you know, give you a chance to comment and, you know, see what you think.
Well, there's a bunch of things that come to mind when you're talking, especially when we talk about alcoholism, because we don't talk about
mm-hmm.
it very much in NASCA, but that is the way I recovered. Because there was no, male survivors or one in sixes or any of that when I was getting sober. There was no acknowledgement that boys could be abused as children. And so the first thing that I found that was going to be really useful turned out to be Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't join Alcoholics Anonymous because I had a trauma in my youth. I joined them because I was having trouble with controlling my drinking, which is what alcoholism is, controlling and enjoying your drinking. If you can't do that, then you're probably an alcoholic. It has control of you. Well, anyway, I went to AA for that, which is what most people go to AA for. But I was also seeking some kind of recovery process for a boy, obviously a man, a young man, and I could not find any. Nobody knew of any. They just turned me away everywhere I went. I read in the Big Book, which is the text that Alcoholics Anonymous uses, a phrase that said, or a sentence that said, that what the program was, the 12 steps were not so much about getting sober, it was more about a design for living. And that design for living allowed you to relieve yourself of the pressures and the history that you could then walk through. And so, you know, if you don't have pressure, why drink, you know? So it made it easier to go through your life without having to drink. So that's what it does. And I thought to myself, well, then, you know, I already knew that there was an Overeaters Anonymous, a Narcotics Anonymous, a Cocaine Anonymous, an Al-Anon, and all these that use the same 12 steps but applied it to their issue, like overeating. People with eating problems. It's the same 12 steps, but you can use it, and there's an organization that's been using it for years and years now. If you have a problem either overeating or undereating, like you could be an anorexic and have an eating disorder. So that's for that and so forth. And so I just said, well, they claim that you can use it for other issues. I'm going to try it out on the trauma, which is what I did. So early on in my recovery from alcoholism, I started to apply these pieces of the same 12 steps to the issues that I was experiencing as a traumatized young adult from my childhood experiences. And sure enough, I started to make progress. And I made the progress along the same time as I started to work on steps. I didn't make progress all at once. You don't make progress all at once. You make progress according to the step you're on, you know, the place you're at. And then you walk backwards, which we talked about just a moment ago. You know, it's not a straight line. You make a You make some progress, and then something comes up, and you fall back a little. And you make some progress, and then you fall back a little. Hopefully, you never fall all the way back, which I never, I didn't fall all the way back after that first slip. But as you do that, you can then apply what you're learning to the other issues in your life, the biggest one of which was, of course, childhood trauma. And I started sharing in the meetings about my childhood trauma. And I was afraid they were going to kick me out, and they didn't. In fact, they said, you know, keep coming back. It's obvious you need to talk about this stuff. And it contributed a great deal as to why you would want to drink in the first place. They invited me to come back. And so that's where it came from for me. And I still could not find a really good recovery model when years later, 20 years later, I had to start coming to Florida, which is where you are, and I lived just a mile away from where you are or so. And we didn't know each other, but we became friends because of that distance. And what I learned about in Florida was that I didn't expect it, but I was going to be there about half the time because I was there to support my dying mother, basically, my elderly mother, who eventually did die, but it took her a number of years, and I kept going back and forth between California and Florida, California and Florida. And I had to establish a kind of a basis for my recovery in Florida, too. Well, I was looking around for a group, again, that could support me in child abuse recovery. Couldn't find it. Especially, I couldn't find it with, now there was a lot more experience, obviously, 25 years later. But there was no group that I could find that was as comfortable to me as, say, AA was to me and some other things. So I, after trying a few of them out and being disappointed, I decided to, if I can't find one, I'll start one. And I had a lot of experience in recovery, so I kind of knew what I was doing on that score. And I knew how to build a website, so I kind of knew what I was doing on that score. I didn't know any other trauma victims, but I figured they'd come if I did it right. And sure enough, Tammy, we have thousands of people now who have come through the NASCA organization, and hundreds of them that have stayed attached. And we frequently find new volunteers and new people who are excited when they find NASCA, because indeed it does incorporate so many things that people find unique. They say, I've never seen this anywhere else, but it's exactly what I've been looking for. And that's the idea, was to give them whatever they were looking for. What I was looking for had to be the same as they were looking for, because I'm not special. I just built what I thought would be comfortable for me if I had found it. And sure enough, we had quite a family, we call it, fall into the NASCA organization. Right now we're going through learning curve. We don't have a treasury, so we don't have a staff. We can't hire anybody. So all our staff is volunteer workers, and because of that, we have to accept the fact that, when you have volunteers and they say they're going to be around, you have to trust that they're going to be around. And if they're not around, there's not much you can do about it, And you have to figure out why they're not coming around, and then, indeed, if they decided they're not going to come around. And once you do that, then you got to go look for somebody to replace them. Then you got to train that new person. It's just on and on. It's so much work to get this thing going and to keep it going. And right now we're in a space where we've needed some additional volunteers because we lost a few. And so we're trudging through, trudging along. And we do have a core group of a few that I don't think we'll ever really lose, except if we get tired. That can happen. But, you're one of them. And we're just trying to do the best we can, and someday we might not have enough staff to do radio shows. Oh, well, we'll stop for a while, because that's one of the challenges. We have to produce hosts and they have to be trained, and we have to have guests every week, three of them, plus two co-hosts every week. So there's a lot of using up of material, especially, for example, guests. We like to have guests come back, but we don't like them to come back next week. They'll come back in 6 months or 9 months or a year, and that's fine, and retell their story and tell us how they've grown in that year. But to to expect people to come back, you know, after a week or two, that's not how we do it. So we need to actually leave the opportunity for newer people, for people who have not been on, to come forward and say, well, I'll take Thursday night, you know, whatever it is. And we don't want to fill up Thursday nights, because then we might deprive the opportunity from newcomers who want to tell their story, perhaps for the first time, to come forward. So I'll let you say a comment or two about what I just said, and I'll be quiet.
Well, you know, I understand where you're coming from, and you're right. I mean, I'm the one with one of the ones that I had to take a break. I mean, I had to take a break. And, you know, sometimes, you know, life happens to us. And when you have volunteers, whether it's – and I've seen it in the Chamber of Commerce. I've seen it on other, you know, volunteers that I've done. You know, sometimes people do come and go, but then sometimes people just get tired, or life happens. You know, like I said, what I've dealt with, you know, having one of my abusers die, you know, dying and then die, that was traumatic. And I need it. There's no way on earth I could have dealt with that and talked about this when going through what I was going through. I just couldn't. I was having a hard enough time. So you're right. It is a lot of work, and it does take a lot of teamwork. And you know, sometimes we have to cover each other, and you know, life happens. You know, dealing with, you know, the, you know, setting up, finding somewhere to, you know, to go, as you explained, there wasn't really anything out there. You know, NASCA was one of the first, and that's great. We were groundbreaking. You were groundbreaking, and that's amazing. You know, there's a few of the groups out there. I know some of the folks that have come and gone, they've started up groups, and that's okay. You know, we just want people to get help and support as they need them. Mom, I need to check the studio and make sure nobody has popped in. Life happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, life happens, and you know, to have somewhere to go when somebody needs something. You're right. People come up, and you know, they come into NASCA. They're on fire. They participate. They get to a healing process, and sometimes you just got to cut it off. You can only deal with it for so long. And some people, you know, get what they need, and they move on with life. You know, I've seen that as well. You know, and then.
Yeah.
We've got one girl, she's actually, you know, a phenomenal. She's in California. You know, she'll pop in every now and again. You know, I haven't been on the show since right before Thanksgiving. And I don't know if Tamika has been on the show lately, but she's one who comes to mind. You know, she'll come on, come on three or four shows, and then she'll disappear, and a year later she shows up. She needs it. You know, she needs to get plugged in, and it's great to have somewhere to plug in. Too, but I mean, that's what comes to my mind, you know. And I just explained a lot of, you know, I just poured my heart out, you know, a lot of what I'm going through, and you know how it ties into to exactly what you said. Sometimes we just have to back off, and you know, it may or may not be accepted, but that's okay. I mean, sometimes we just have to take care of us. I mean, I can think of many people that they just have to take care of them, and then they come back. Some do, some don't. You know, some people go up and, you know, start their own organization, and that's okay.
Exactly. We have a unique set of subjects and topics that we cover, and it is unique. So usually when a person goes off to do something of their own, they copy some of it, but then they don't copy all of it. And that's part of why they fail, I believe. But I've been around so many different groups that I just picked the best stuff I could find from all the groups. And when I needed to apply something to NASCA, I picked that best platform, whatever it was. Well, now, on the score of what you just said, Tamika, for example, was with us for a while, and now she's asked to take a break. Now, that's not – she hasn't been here that long, but she did take a break, so she's not on our schedule.
Well, is Tamika the one that this is a male? Is that the one that has been plugged into us? Tamika, is that, are we talking about the same person? Because I was thinking about the one, I'm not talking about the host, I was talking about the transgender gentleman who was joining us there for a while.
We haven't seen her.
Him, yeah.
But we have seen the one that was training as a host, and that person's Chambers decided not to do it. So, we had somebody that we were planning on having in that position, and we don't. And that's another thing that happens. You train somebody, and you can't hold on to them. If they decide they're going to leave, they leave. But you've you spent a lot of time, getting them up to speed before that happens. And it's all lost if they don't stay with it. So, but you still have the need. We still have the need.
I got you.
And, I was going to say something else, and I forgot what it was. That's all right. It'll come back. Oh. I have to blow my nose one time.
Well, let's see. Is there anything else that we want to dissect? I'd like to, if anyone is listening, if you'd like to join us, the number is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. And please join us if you want to talk about, your recovery path or some challenges you have with that, or if you want to talk about, anything else with your, with the child abuse, that's okay too. That's, why we're here. The 12 steps. So maybe this might be a good time because there's 12 steps. What are the 12 steps? I'm going to pull them up because I've looked at them a couple of times.
Okay. If people want to see what the 12 steps are like when they apply to trauma recovery, they can go on the front page of our website and under participate at NASCA, which is at one of the bright red blocks that go across the page. There's five blocks that go across the page. The last one, participate at NASCA, is where you find it. You go down to the second to last link, and it says the 12 traditions. You want to know the steps or the traditions?
Well, let's talk about where they are, where they can find them, and what they are. That might be a good time for us to talk about the 12 steps that we're talking about. I'll send it over to you.
Okay. All right, let me give a little instruction on the 12 traditions since they're the thing that is on the front page, and then we can talk about the other. The 12 traditions is to the group what the steps are to the individual. In other words, they're a framework for spiritual growth, the principles that guide the group, and they relate to the mission of the group, which in the case of 12-step recovery is always is to deal with whatever the topic is. So in our case, it's trauma recovery and alcoholism. In Alcoholics Anonymous case, it's alcoholism. And, in Overeaters Anonymous case, it's overeating. But anyway, I found that all you really have to do is substitute the word that's more appropriate for your effort with the word that's maybe not so appropriate, but that's the only thing you replace. So in some of them, you don't even replace anything. Like the first one is our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon NASCA's unity. The only thing I changed there was the word NASCA from Alcoholics Anonymous. Second one, for our group purposes, there's but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Didn't change a thing in that one. Three. The only requirement for NASCA's membership is a desire to recover and heal from child abuse and trauma. So that's different because the only requirement for membership in AA is a desire to be sober. So that's a different step or tradition. But in terms of recovering and healing, we don't specify any particular type of recovery and healing at NASCA. We talk about them all. We talk about any that anybody wants. And, of course, one group of them would be the 12 steps, but there are many other groups that we talk about all the time. There's psychoanalysis, there's psychology, there's counseling, there's life coaches, there's other nonprofit groups, there's animal therapy and art therapies, and there's EMDR, and there's, I mean, there's many, many ways. There's, you know, hypnosis. And, you know, they're all legitimate. And if you find, you know, more benefit to, let's say, hypnosis than to something else, well, then by all means, do hypnosis. You know, get the story out of you, though. That's what it's all about, is to uncover whatever's going on inside of you, discover what it's all about, and then get rid of it, discard. Uncover, discover, and record, and discard. So that's what that's about. All right. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups and ask as a whole. We don't. Nobody's the boss of anybody else. No one group is the boss over any other group. Each group has but one primary purpose: to carry its message to the adult survivor of child abuse who still suffers. Pretty simple. NASCA's groups never endorse, finance, or lend the NASCA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. Less problems with money, property, and proceeds divert us from our primary purpose. And we can talk about that in a second. The primary purpose is important to know. But the point is that anything that's not part of the primary purpose is kind of off base for how we approach our recovery. It doesn't belong. The only thing that does belong is, you know, the issues that are inside our primary purpose, so our mission, in other words. Every NASCA group ought to be fully supporting declining outside contributions, which you went over earlier. We don't accept large sums of money from corporations or foundations or anything like that, but we do accept contributions from members or people who want to support us, you know, in more reasonable amounts. We just don't put on campaigns to support us. So it's about individual contributions. The National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse should remain forever non-professionals, but our service centers may employ special workers. This will apply in the future, especially the second part, if we ever do have special centers, service centers, where we need to employ special workers. That would be, for example, a lot of AA groups establish what they call a club or a workshop or a workhouse or something, and many groups meet in there because there's a big meeting room. But then when the meetings are over, there's a common space. Often it has like a coffee bar, you know, and maybe a television is going, and maybe there's a pool table, stuff like that. So somebody has to man the coffee bar, and somebody has to answer the phone, and somebody has to clean up after everybody leaves, and that kind of thing. Those are what we call special workers. So they deserve to be employed, because if they were employed with our groups, then it denies them employment somewhere else. And we think it's fair that people who work, you know, are employed, are paid. But on the other hand, forever non-professional in the first half of this tradition, by that we mean that you don't have to be a doctor of psychology in order to, you know, to lead a group. You have to be a sober alcoholic to lead a group, or you have to be somebody who's pretty comfortable in their own skin as far as trauma recovery. Hopefully you would have good recovery in order to be chosen, selected as a leader, but it's not necessary to have any kind of degree or anything like that. NASCA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. We have, in AA, we have group committees that deal with city issues in any big city, or state issues in the states, and then there's national issues and so forth. But those are all service boards or committees, and they're not paid for the service they give to the committee, but they are sometimes reimbursed for travel costs and things like that. Because obviously if you have to, one time I went to Hawaii as a representative from California, and, you know, they paid for my plane trip, which was nice. But otherwise I wouldn't have been able to go. All right, the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the NASCA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. We limit our talks on the issues that are expressed in our mission statement. And if you can't remember the mission statement, I'll go over it again. The single purpose at NASCA is to address issues related to child abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And, of course, we do this with only two goals. One, to educate the public, especially as it's related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting the facts to show that child abuse is a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. And two, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to alcoholics, to adult survivors of child abuse, and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. So there are very few requirements, but one of them is that we have to stick to the topic. And that is because the experience of the 12-step groups is that if you allow other issues to leak into the issue that you're trying to talk about, it can really damage the success that you have in your primary group. Matter of fact, there's a story I could tell you that in the second there was a group called the Washingtonians in the Civil War, just before the Civil War, who had found that a similar path to recovery from alcoholism, and they had a couple hundred thousand people, and they were, as you might imagine, sort of scattered around Washington, D.C. And they had a 12-step, maybe a 6-step system or something like that, but they didn't have the singleness of purpose. And sure enough, when the Civil War showed up, some were Southern, sympathizers, some were Northern sympathizers, and they let the topic into their meetings, and then they became argumentative and it destroyed the group. And so at the end of the Civil War, by the end of the Civil War, it was dissolved and hardly ever remembered. But we did find out about it and wrote about it a few years ago now. But that's where that comes from, that kind of thing happening. Let's see, what else? Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. This is to say, in Alcoholics Anonymous, it was shameful to admit you were an alcoholic when Alcoholics Anonymous came along in 1935. And so people did not say, "Hi, I'm Bill, I'm an alcoholic," because you would never get another job. People would talk about you all the time. They would take your inventory and so forth. But nowadays it's changed a little and relaxed a little. However, I still believe that anonymity, the public relations policy that's based on attraction rather than promotion, and the maintaining of a personal anonymity on the level of press, radio, and films should be given to anybody who requests it. And we're not so afraid anymore of talking about our recovery, either from drugs and alcohol or from child abuse, although child abuse continues to be a issue that's really shameful to a lot of people until they get a little footing under themselves. So that's why we allow, we have different policies that allow people to come on the radio show and not use their real name, for example, because we want to maintain their ability to stay anonymous until they're comfortable and getting out of that. And then 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. So again, this is a spiritual foundation page step, and it asks that we think about the things that we would want before the things that we would insist on promoting for ourselves. Now that's the 12 traditions. I'd stop at this point and ask if there's any comments you'd like to make, Tammy.
No, I'm just listening to you review them. No, go ahead. Is that all 12 of them? All 12 of the traditions?
That's the traditions. Now the steps
okay.
are something different. The steps.
Well, I said steps early. I meant to say traditions.
Okay.
I'm confused.
We don't promote the steps. Well, we don't promote the steps. That's a personal decision. If you want to follow the steps, which I do, but that's a personal decision. And I did not build NASCA around the steps. I built the NASCA around those traditions I just read, which is, again, there's 12 of them. So I'm sorry it's 12 of one and 12 of the other, but I don't want to be confusing, but it's the 12 traditions that form the basis of and the skeleton for how Nazca was built. Yeah. Whereas the 12 steps are a possible path to recovery, but there's lots of others, as I said before. You know, it is, however, the one I use because I didn't know any better. I didn't have anything else offered to me. So.
Right.
All right.
Okay, cool. Okay, so that was the 12 steps, and then we have our 12 traditions.
Well, that was the traditions.
Okay. Okay. All right. Oh, the M&A. Okay, I gotcha. Because I was trying to, okay, I said steps early, and then it's steps, okay. Because when I look, I'm looking at the website, we have the 12 steps, and then we have the 12 traditions. So you just read the 12 traditions, and I see the last one is anonymity. Going back, the 12 steps. Those, okay, that comes from the AA program.
Right.
Okay.
I don't think
have
the 12 steps on the, I don't think we have the 12 steps on
you
the
do,
website.
I'm looking at
it. We have the 12 traditions.
You do.
Where?
No, you have both. You have both.
Where?
If you go where it says this is the week's talk radio show, or there's a link that says 12 Steps Recovery. If you hit that, then this page comes up. It's orange with the green line, and then it's got ASAA Overview, ASAA 12 Steps, ASCAA 12 Traditions, Suggested Meeting Formats, Literature.
Yeah.
And it's got the and it's got 12 Steps Blog.
All right. I'm not sure where you got into it, but you're right. I do have a site that you just read. It's not it's beside Nazca, however. It's not inside of Nazca. And it's at Ask a 12 Step.
Well, no, if you go to if you go to the this week's radio talk shows, Thursday 1:20 call in discussion with Bill Murray, and it says 12 Steps Recovery, and Bill, and if you hit that 12 Step Recovery, that's where I'm going.
Right. Right. That's ASCA12step.org. These are, this is where you'd find the 12 steps. It's the second link in here. What is ASCAA?
Right.
It's Adult Survivors of Child Abuse Anonymous. Now, that's, this is a possible fellowship you could form. And if you did, you'd want to have the 12 steps available, too, which is listed in the column on the left. If you click that, we just read the traditions right below it. But if you click that, you will see in a beautiful orange and green color the 12 steps typed out. These are the 12 steps, and you're right. They're the same 12 steps as any other group uses in a 12-step program, except it substitutes for the word alcohol, substitutes trauma, the word trauma, or, you know, for shortcomings, it describes you know, whatever it is, that we have personal wrongs. So anyway, we admit we were powerless over the abuse and trauma of our youth, that our lives have become unmanageable. So we've placed the abuse and trauma of our youth with alcohol. I mean, yeah, from alcohol. We replaced it. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. We had admitted we were powerless over the abuse and trauma of our youth, that our lives had become unmanageable. So the one phrase got substituted because it relates more to the issue that we're trying to face. Came to believe that our power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. That's the same. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God, as we understood, and that's the same. Made a searching and fearless moral endeavor to ourselves. That's the same. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. That's the same. We're entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. That's the same. Humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. The same. Make a list of all persons we had harmed and become willing to make amends to them all. It's the same. Make direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Same. Continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Same. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our contact, our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry out that out. That's the same. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, this is number 12, we tried to carry this message to other still suffering adult survivors of child abuse and to practice these principles in all affairs. So we substituted the words adult survivors of child abuse for the word alcoholics. alcoholics. We tried to carry this message to other alcoholics to practice these principles in all our affairs, too. We tried to carry this message to still suffering adult survivors of child abuse and practice these principles in all our affairs. So, yeah, that's the 12 steps, which I did follow and still do follow by as a way of relieving myself, I guess you'd say, of the burden of the the burden of what trauma from child abuse brings to me, which I don't want to live anymore. I want to live in an easier way, because then, as I said before, it's a design for living that really lightens the load. And then why would I behave badly if I have a lighter load, you know? Or if I'm not drinking, if I stop drinking, the reason I stop drinking is because I have less defects of character, opinions, then you know, I'm less likely to drink.
Okay. Well, thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate that. Now
yeah.
I see the difference. I mean, I'm looking at the difference of the two and the similarities
right.
of the two. Okay, cool beans.
Right. So we have half an hour left. About we can discuss anything you'd like, Tan. Tammy.
I just like I said earlier, I poured my heart out, and I know some of the stuff I'm dealing with and how I can relate it to what we were talking about. It's, you know, child abuse and getting over our past. You know, sometimes it's a sliding scale for anyone who may be listening. You know, I've considered myself healed, non-issues. A lot of it, you know, I come on the show, you know, I help others. I get a lot out of it. I give a lot back. And then, you know, then our past comes back to haunt us. It can happen to any of us. It can happen to all of us. It may not ever happen to you, but I've had it before. You know, when my grandmother actually died, it put me through something. You know, because I knew I would never get that apology that I deserved, you know, and I know even with what happened, you know, this last holiday season, I knew it really didn't even have anything to do with her, but it brought those feelings up. You know, it brought up the pain, it brought up the anguish, and, you know, reliving it over and over and over again, you know, something that I had labeled myself not there anymore. You know,
yeah.
Able to talk about it, able to help others, able to do up, and then, you know, and then it becomes, you know, and it becomes, you know, alive again, you know, and it's real easy just to relive and relive and relive, and then when we can't stand the pain anymore, you know, douse ourselves in alcohol or douse ourselves in drugs or overeat or whatever the case may be. So they are connected a lot of times because, you know, the trauma that we've gone through, you know, how do we self-medicate? You know, do we self-medicate by getting in therapy? I mean, because there's some people that, you know, go to therapy, you know, have three therapists, you know, go to therapy 10
That's
times,
right.
you know, 10 times a week, you know, whether they overeat or whether you, you know, self-medicate, whatever the self-medication is, you know, there's got to be healthier ways in order to deal with it. And sometimes it's just getting through it. You know, we've talked about that, just getting through it, you know, in a healthy environment, you know, talking about it, getting, you know, a support system together, you know, so we don't go, you know, douse ourselves in tequila or vodka or drugs or food or whatever the case may be. You know, you don't have to be a victim to be an alcoholic or a drug abuser or, you know, some kind of whatever our vice is. But, you know, you don't. Not all of them are. But a lot of times us survivors are. You know, we do choose that path, you know, to help us get through it. Many of us have. You know, I hear story after story, you know, the years that I have been on NASCA, you know, and I've been involved in NASCA since, I think, 2014. I think that's when I first got involved, is 2014, maybe early 15. But yeah, because I left for Shreveport in December 2014, and you and I had connected right before that, you know, a few months before
That's
that.
Correct.
So I've been involved in NASCA since 2014, I know there's people with more tenure, less tenure. If that's okay, it's not a measurement. But, you know, I've heard story after story after story after story, and they're all, you know, near and dear to me. I don't mean to you know, lessen the importance of it, but, you know, I hear, I turned to alcohol, I turned to drugs, I couldn't stand myself. I couldn't stand what I was dealing with. I couldn't stand the pain. I couldn't stand the triggers, whatever the case may be. So they are connected. Like I said, you don't have to be a child abuse survivor to be an alcoholic, but a lot of child abuse survivors are alcoholics. So if that makes sense, right. Bill.
Yeah, no, it does.
So.
But again, it's not a moral issue. If you have a problem with drinking and you become an alcoholic, it's not a moral issue.
It's more
a healthcare issue, you know.
Yes.
Mental
and
so you want to. Right, and spiritual, because the answer to them, to the problems we have are really what I just read, the spiritual program that I just read. You don't have to use that. You can use something else. You can use some of the techniques that are used in drug rehabilitation facilities, but I didn't. I didn't have the wherewithal to do that. So, I got sober off the street and used the 12 steps, which are free, and just kept coming back to the same rooms over and over and over all week long. And instead of it done, it worked. Now, the thing is that, you don't get rid of your shortcomings and your character defects and your bad behavior and so forth because you're not drinking or because you want to not be traumatized anymore. In fact, it may increase the opportunity for you to participate in, for example, bad behavior. You're used to calming yourself with behaviors that were not addictive, but became addictive perhaps, and that's what you've been using for years. And it really worked. That's why we used it. And then it becomes a problem itself, and we have to learn how to deal with it. Same thing happens with child abuse trauma. In child abuse trauma, the first experiences of trauma are insane. They really are maddening, and I think they begin in childhood. When we've been traumatized, almost right after we've been traumatized, we start to experience. When we are abused, we almost immediately start to experience some kind of trauma. At the very least, we have the trauma of not knowing what the heck to do with it. You know, who to tell, what to do. Was that wrong? Was that right? Am I sick? Am I a sinner? You know, and so we have to figure that out too. But when we start to figure it out, we get our feet under us. You know, it's also very common, as you said, and this is the point I wanted to make, but to make some progress for a while, and then to look down on people who haven't made progress yet and say, "Shit, I don't know why you can't do it. I do it easily. It's easy for me." And then someday you stumble. And we certainly hope that if you do, you remember that you were told that if you stumble, you simply get back up and come back in, and start being honest about it, which I think is the bottom line, most important thing to do, is to tell the truth. And not like on the mountaintop, but at least to some, your friends or your sponsor or maybe your therapist or somebody ought to know the majority of the truth about you. And then the groups themselves over time will also get to know the majority of the truth about you, and some of them will know all the truth. You have to get to that place, but it's really worth getting there, because then you feel like you belong to the world. I tell you, one of the sensations I had for so long was, I didn't belong to society, to the world. I didn't know how to fit in. I didn't feel comfortable anywhere. So, bless you.
I mean, I know that feeling all so well, you know, and sometimes where we feel once comfortable, it becomes uncomfortable. I've had that happen repeatedly in my life. People, you know, whether it's friends, you know, whether it's, and I wrote something on Facebook a few weeks ago, and I've had it where, you know, our support system changes sometimes. You know, this person or that organization may have helped me 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and then you start struggling, you reach out to them, and you don't get the same support. And, you know, I'm not talking about NASCA. I'm not talking about anybody in general, just, you know, in general. You know, I mean, just, you know, you know, you may call Betty Sue, may have helped you 5 years ago, and then you get through it and you start struggling, you call Betty Sue. Betty Sue's in a different place. Maybe Betty Sue was going through something similar at the time and, you know, could relate. So, you know, if somebody gets a support system, you know, NASCA is a support system, and we pretty much don't change. I mean, we have our mission statement, and that's what we do. And like you said earlier, people come and go. Organizations come and go. We're pretty, you know, NASCA is pretty solid. But, you know, sometimes what we need, we get from different places. You know, you may have gotten it there. And, you know, therapy may help you at some point, but maybe, you know, a group or a friend or a pastor may help you the next time. You know, it's you get
right.
You get support from different places, and that's okay. You know, I learned that, you know, because I can think of this one friend as a childhood friend that I've been reaching out to, and he was right there. And then when I started struggling back in the holidays, you know, he wasn't there. You know, his name is Randy. His first name is Randy. That's all I'll say. You know, he was at a different place. Maybe as I, you know, reached out to him before, you know, maybe he could relate. But, you know, he's moved on. And, you know, and Tammy calling him up with the same bullshit was, you know, a nuisance. He didn't say that, but I could feel it, you know.
Right.
You know, so you call the next person. You know, my sister, you know, I could call her at any time, and she's there. I mean, it's not always been like that because, I mean, we didn't speak for 5 or 6 years. I hated her. I hated her. You know, she betrayed me. You know, through the years
right.
Now, you know, my sister's pretty solid. I can call her up, and, you know, she's changed. She's not the same person. She's a diehard bleeding AA person. I mean, that's what they do. I mean, she's got a whole group of them. I mean, when I went home for Thanksgiving, you know, because my stepfather died on Thanksgiving Day, officially when we unplugged him, you know, Thanksgiving was canceled for us. You know, so we went out to the next day. We went over to her friends, and there was a whole group of AA people. Must have been 40 people there. I mean, that's the life in what she lives. So, you know I can reach out to her, and I'm going to get a sympathetic ear, and she's going to give me solid, you know, solid advice. And that's a good resource for me because, you know, she's plugged in. You know, just like NASCA's a plug-in place. You know, her and her AA is a plug-in place. AA is a plug-in place. You know, where, you know, this friend or that friend, you know, fell short for what I needed at the time. You know,
uh-huh.
So, you know, that's something that just comes to my mind is, you know, you may get different resources and different help and different things from different people, you know, when you need it. That's just what's coming to my mind.
Well, and I don't think there's any shortage of other things to try, you know. You can be doing pretty well, and say, you know, I'm doing pretty well, but it seems to me there probably is something else I could do too. Not that I'm not satisfied, but let's look around, you know. And so you do it. The best thing to do is the best way to do it is to do it in a relaxed atmosphere, so you're not like desperate to find the other thing. You should find the other thing before you get desperate, and. There's, believe me, a lot of different paths and organizations. And just look at the number of groups that there are now on Facebook that deal with child abuse issues. Oh, my God. And, you know.
Yeah, but you don't know when you're going to get desperate. You don't know when the melon's going to drop and split. You know, sometimes we can recognize it. But how do you recognize that when you know your melon's about to split on the floor? How do you know? You know, if you have a sudden death in the family or, you know, the smell of shrimp, you know, brings back trauma, you know, trauma that you long forgot, you know, and how do you know? You know, what do you do?
Well, you don't, and you can't assume that everything's going to stay where it is, because it won't. Life doesn't stay where it is. It changes.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily change in huge ways, but it changes, and sometimes it does take, big change, make big changes. So you just can't take it for granted that it's never going to change. That's all I'm saying. So, yeah, it's healthy to remember that changes will occur. We don't want them to occur, but they may. And if we're comfortable now and a change happens and we didn't want it to happen, we still got to find a way to climb back up on the horse, and survive, So.
Right. I mean, I think of one of our hosts, and I'm not going to mention her by name, but, she's one of the Thursday professionals who came on. I don't remember which Thursday, but, we get in discussions, and I don't want to tell her story, so I'm not going to tell her name. But, she was dealing with, and she's done this, and she's written that, and she's gone there, and she's helped this, and just an amazing, amazing person. And she had a trauma in her life where, someone committed suicide, and it split her melon open. And you could tell, as she was telling her story, it was raw. You could tell that her melon had been split open, and she needed to talk about it. And it was a little off topic, but that's okay. And, I really now can empathize with what this person was dealing with. When you have your melon split open, you think your melon's together, and you think you're here, and next thing your melon's splattered on the floor. It happens to a lot of us, and it would be great if we could say, okay, well, I know that that I'm going to be dealing with trauma, I know that triggers are going to come up, so I better, plug in, but, how do you know? I mean, I remember one of the things, and I talked about this a couple of times on the show, was, who would have thought that shrimp would bring back a trigger in my life? I've eaten shrimp for years. I didn't even think about it. And then one day, I get the smell and the look of shrimp tails, and I remember a trauma that happened to me when I was four, maybe five at the oldest, and it was, it's pretty bad, but who would have thought a shrimp, as many times as I love shrimp, as many times I've eaten shrimp, why that particular time, why those particular shrimp tails brought up that memory, I have no clue, no clue. So sometimes, it'll hit us by surprise, and that's okay. We just got to, like you said, find a way to get through it and get ourselves in a better place. So.
Triggers can
your
occur
thoughts.
From anything. Triggers can occur from anything, including smells, of course. But also, you can't guard against them because there may be some things that you know to avoid. But there's other things that, you may be around them 100 times. It's the 101st time that that you have a trigger, that they cause a trigger.
Like the shrimp cells.
That's right. That's right. So you can't. You just can't say I'm absolutely over that thing.
Right. Well, Bill, what are your thoughts? We've talked about a lot. We've hit a bunch of different subjects. So I've probably strayed a couple times, and that's okay. It's getting back into the groove of things, and getting past my own trauma, getting past my own issues. We all have them. We all have them. We're survivors. I don't want to say we're broken, but all survivors have scars. All survivors, have a story, and that's one of the things we do on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday is we allow people to come on and tell their story. I've told my story twice. Maybe a time where I'm trying to break in. Who knows? I may get to a point to where I'm prepared to, ready to tell it a third time. When I told my story the first time, it was the second time was different than the first time. Some of the stuff overlapped, but different memories and different. I was dealing with different things at different times. Where I was 5, 6 years ago, 10 years ago is not where I am today. Even if I have a backslide.
I don't think of it as a backslide. I just think of it as a pause. Just don't worry about it. You, we, you know, NASCA fellows and also AA fellows ought to be in a place where they can pretty easily let a person back in. You know, it's not these things are not held against you. You hold them against yourself, yeah, because you're disappointed in yourself. But you know, I've never seen a group like vote somebody out. Oh, you can't come back because you drank. You know, whatever. You know, it doesn't happen. So
yeah,
you know, but I've seen lots of them spend the meeting talking to the person or to the person's issues, if they want them to,
mm-hmm.
to kind of assure them that they are welcome back and that perhaps give some perspective to why this happened
mm-hmm.
and so forth. I've seen that many times. So,
have you ever watched the show? It's a little sitcom. I love them. I watch the reruns all the time. It's called Mom, M-O-M, Mom.
I don't know.
Oh, gosh. It's such a cute show. It's got little blonde, she's tiny, and it's got her mom, and it's all centered around AA. It's all centered around AA and dysfunction, and you know that's what they do. Is they, you know, they're sober. It's cute. It's comedy. It's got Bonnie is very selfish. The mom is very selfish and very outspoken. I mean, it's absolutely hilarious. If you ever see it, you know, if you go in through your Comcast or you know whatever dish or whatever you have, and you see Mom. Watch it because it's all about AA and recovery. That's the whole show, and it's absolutely hilarious. And you know, and a lot of things they talk about, you know, hit home. It really does.
Uh-huh.
You know, some of it's funny. You know, you know how shows are, especially comedies. You know, the dysfunction is funny. You know, but they have this Marjorie. She's the old lady. She was, you know, she's from the '60s. You know, the flower child and. You know, she's robbed a bank and you robbed, you know, and, you know, she's been in the, she's a leader in the program, been in the program for 20, 30 years, older lady, you know, that it's just hilarious. But it's where, you know, sometimes you'll hit something, you know, it's a stupid, you know, sitcom that kind of, you know, it's a topic that, you know, hits to us. You know, here they are going to an AA recovery program, have them in the circle, in the group, you know, talking, you know. Hi, I'm Bonnie. I'm an alcoholic. And then she starts telling her story. Sometimes it's appropriate. Sometimes it's selfish, you know, and they, you know, they deal with and her dysfunctional daughter's right there who bust her out. It's a funny show, but it's also very, very real as well.
Well, I think comedy is
anyway.
One of the best ways of getting points across, you know.
Yeah.
It's
really
called
Mom.
Learning tool.
Mm-hmm. You'll have to check it out if you see it. They play it all the time. What is it? Which one is it that plays CMT? You know, because they have the reruns of The Last Man Standing, and then they have Mom. You know, sometimes they'll show them on different shows like that. So those off channels. You know, Laugh and what's another one? You'll see it. So
mm-hmm.
It's cool. I think so. I like it. I'll sit there and watch them.
Well, then I think you should watch it as often as you can.
Exactly.
Enjoy yourself.
I'm still at work, actually. I got a little bit done while we talked, but not much. So.
Oh, my.
Oh, yeah, I'm sitting here at my desk. My accountant's coming in. I have set myself a very aggressive. I'll start school Tuesday. I start back school. And then my accountant, my boss, tell me what. We're not filing for extension. Make sure you have my taxes done and don't hand them to me on March 14th. I was like, okay. Tammy's going to be here. I'm going to be burning a lot of midnight oil, and then I scheduled for her to come in February 3rd. So, oh, my God. You know, weekends and nights, you know, I'll be sitting here right at this desk. But that's okay. Yeah, at least they feed me well. I mean, there could be a worse of fate. I have, you know, top profile executive chef cooking my dinner at night, so it could be worse.
Yeah, that's right. You know, you remind me of something because I asked you to do me a favor, which you did do a couple of weeks ago, and that was to check the address on the tax people that I was using here in Florida and make sure that I had the right address. And so then I gathered up all the materials and I put them in a post office box, you know, U.S. Post Office box, and mm-hmm. sent them off. And we hadn't heard for a long time where they went. And then we called, and it mm-hmm. turns out that the company did not get the box, but the post office says it did deliver it. So we are confused and don't know how we're going to replace
it is,
all the forms.
It is at the, huh? Yeah, it is at the same place. I think I sent you a copy of their card, because I got there
we compared the address that I'd used to what their address is, and it was correct.
Also
somehow,
that girl works from home. So they, she's like, well, she's an employee. She's not the owner. She works from home. So whether they got it, I don't know. But
it went to the office.
Yeah.
Yeah,
what they did with it from there.
In their mall. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's
well, they were redecorating when I went in there. They were redecorating
really?
When they went in there, so chances of them losing it was pretty high.
Like redoing the painting and stuff like that?
Yeah, they were putting, I had to walk over stuff in the lobby. I never got past the lobby, but I did, I went into the lobby and talked to her, and, they were doing stuff.
Huh.
But the lobby was really, really tiny. I mean, it was just a little place, and we were putting the film
on
the door.
Yeah, I've been in there. It's just two seats, right? It's three seats.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, with a little counter.
Mm-hmm.
That's it's a shame because I don't know how I'm going to replace any of that stuff. It was years and years of stuff, and I had gathered it all together and put it in one box and sent it.
You didn't keep copies.
You
didn't make Xerox copies.
No, I didn't. No, I didn't
think
of that. Yeah.
Hmm. Well, I'm sorry to hear that, Bill. If you want me to drive over there, I'll drive over there. I mean, I'm not sure if they'll do any good, but I mean, it's just right up the road. I don't mind.
Well, if you're around that area, but we got to figure out what to do. At least I can get the federal forms, right? Because
mm-hmm.
they're on file somewhere, and
but
I don't know. They had asked me for a bunch of stuff, and sure enough, I had saved it. I put it in. It was in different piles of junk, but I went through all the piles and pulled everything out and sent it.
Oh wow!
So
okay,
yeah,
okay.
All right, we are almost
all right,
out
well,
of time.
Got,
if was anybody that was? Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead, Bill.
No, I was going to. I was just going to say, if anybody has a thought to call in and say hello, even, there's about 6 minutes left, 5 minutes left, please do so. 646-595-2118 is the phone number. Tammy and I would be delighted to say hello to you tonight. We wish that others had called in, but if you've been listening, call in now and let us know, because we can't tell who is listening out there unless you call and let us know. All right, 646-595-2118.
Okay, well, tomorrow night we have a special guest, Tris Valleys from Pennsylvania,
yeah.
Early Trauma as a
right.
Baby, Without Prejudice.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
So
Sue Carroll will be hosting that show.
That's correct. And
okay,
I'll be there
cool.
as a trailer.
Okay. Very good.
Before we leave, let me just say this. We had a series of three gals who I put on the schedule that we just came out with for hosting. And one of them told me that she hadn't been trained at all. So I helped her get trained a little bit at least. And another one said she was very confused about what she was supposed to do for us, because at one time she'd been told she was going to be a co-ambassador with somebody, and then another time she was going to do something else and then something else. And then finally she said that she'd get involved with the radio show. But then when I called on her, she told me that nobody had ever trained her at all.
Who is she? What's her name?
Kim.
Okay, so she's going to be on with me. Well, she was going to be on tonight, right? And then you've got her own with me next Thursday night.
Right, but I substituted for her, and I will again if I need to. But I'm just saying
okay.
that I, you know, we are not very, we're not coordinating very well, even among the volunteers that we have amongst us. And so it's a shame to have somebody come forward and be serious about wanting to take the commitment, and then because we don't pay attention to their request fast enough, they disappear again, you know.
Well, who has she reached out to, and if you were in the, under the impression she was trained, who said they trained her?
I think Penelope,
I don't know. You don't have to say. Okay.
I don't know for sure. I thought.
If you need me to, you know, make a phone call, you know, to set, because I was doing a lot of the training, and with, you know, with me stepping out, you know, I don't know. I mean, I unplugged. I've been unplugged since Thanksgiving, you know, and I made it clear that I needed to unplug, and John was supposed to take my place, and he agreed to it, and then he didn't know what I was talking about, you know, because he was supposed to take over, you know, for me, and I specifically asked him in the chat with everybody on there, and he agreed, and then he didn't know what I was talking about, and I know he has stepped away as well. But, you know, I knew that I needed to step away,
planned.
And I did. And I made plans for it.
Yeah.
But, you know.
So anyway,
we got to
reconcentrate our efforts on finding, you know, more volunteers that are serious about their commitments. That's all I'll say. Because, you know, we kind of fell down in doing it recently. And you can't. We have so much work. You know, and every time somebody doesn't show up, it reverts back to one of us that's really committed. You know, and we're already booked, you know, completely.
Some volunteers would be a good thing. I mean, you know, that's, and it's volunteer. Well, one thing we have to remember, it's volunteer. So, you know, volunteers come and go. I mean, you've got your core group. I got that. But volunteers, you know, whether it's Chamber of Commerce, I mean, I've seen it with Chamber of Commerce. I've seen it with this. I've seen it with that. You know, we've got a lady here, she does our yacht shop, you know, and if she doesn't volunteer, and we have to keep that in mind that, you know, she's not getting paid for what she does. And then she'll go off to Canada, and we're like, okay, well, she's gone. What are we going to do? Somebody's got to pick up the baton, you know? So, you know, I got it. You know, when you have volunteers, you know, you can't beat them over the back of the head. You can't. I mean, they're volunteering, you know, they're taking their time. But, you know, can we find somebody and, you know, vet people to make sure they're serious? You know, is it when we bring somebody on, do we need to have more of a vetting process, you know, to plug them into substantial, you know, duties? You know, anybody can say they want to be a host of a radio show, but there's a commitment there, you know. So the training, we've got the 90-second mark. Just, you know, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. Maybe that's something we can discuss. Or it can be discussed. So.
Okay. Well, listen, I'm going to say
good night. 90-minute mark. Go ahead.
Right. No, I'm going to say good night, and thank you very much for being here with me. I will, if Kim isn't here by next week, I'll be back with you next week. But I think we have enough time to get her trained if she still wants to, so we'll find that out. But in the meantime, thanks to everyone who is listening, we'll see you again as soon as tomorrow night, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah?
All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Bill. I appreciate it because, you know, otherwise I'd have been here by myself. So thank you. And I know that you had traded with Dr. Romo, whom I love. And I will talk to you later. And God bless the children of the world, and God bless adult survivors of child abuse. Good night, everybody.
Amen. Good night, everybody.
Blog Talk Radio.